We've been talking about the upcoming court-martial of Lieutenant Erin Ouattara, the first American-commissioned officer to refuse to deploy to Iraq. He says the war is illegal. He faces up to 2 years in prison for refusing to deploy. He also faces possible 4 years on charges of violating the Uniform Code of Military Justice in public statements he made opposing the war and criticizing the Bush administration. As I mentioned before, the Army declined to participate in our program. To better understand the charges, we called Eugene Fidel, the president of the National Institute of Military Justice, a nonprofit civilian group whose goal is to advance the fair administration of military justice and foster improved public understanding of the military justice system. It's affiliated with American University. Fidel served in the Coast Guard Reserve as a lieutenant commander. Eugene Fidel, welcome to Fresh Air. Lieutenant Ouattara is the first officer to refuse to deploy to Iraq because he thinks the war is illegal. He did offer to go to Afghanistan instead, but he refused a desk job in Iraq. Is there any legal precedent in the military for what he's doing?
No, there isn't. Not in the United States Armed Forces. Basically, officers and enlisted personnel don't have the option of choosing where they're going to serve. And to the extent that Lieutenant Ouattara effectively was trying to do that, it's not permitted under our system.
But, you know, Lieutenant Ouattara says that if you look at the Nuremberg principles, then an officer has an obligation to reject orders that he or she considers illegal. And the lieutenant is saying this war is illegal, so he has an obligation to not participate in it.
Well, there certainly is military law doctrine found in the Manual for Courts-Martial, which is the governing document here, for the proposition that a person has a defense to a charge of disobeying an order if the order is plainly unlawful or that a reasonable person would know was unlawful. And that simply doesn't apply in this situation. The law is that an order to deploy soldiers is a non-justiciable political question. Now, that's a fancy lawyer's term, but basically it means it's not for the criminal courts, in this case a court-martial, to decide what is effectively a political question. Deploying is different from performing some more ministerial act, some more isolated act. Do you shoot? Do you not shoot? You know, do you have a privilege to commit some other specific act in the course of military operations? That's very different from participation in the operation at all. And the law simply does not permit litigation of the legality of an overall military operation.
What's at stake for the military in that part of his case?
Well, not much, really. I think the military is probably on very firm ground in this respect. The military is not going to permit people to opt in or opt out unless they happen to be conscientious objectors. That's the escape valve in our military legal system. If a person's a conscientious objector, even a person who's already in, obviously, we don't have conscription these days, such a person can apply for what is called in-service conscientious objector status. And all the branches of the service have procedures for screening such applications and deciding whether the individual qualifies or doesn't qualify for separation or for transfer to non-combatant duties. In this case, Lieutenant Ouattara did not apply for conscientious objector status, and I believe the reason for that is that's not the nature of his objection. It's an objection to the legality of the war rather than an objection to participation in war in any form, which is the test for American conscientious objection.
So I think what you're saying, if I hear you correctly, is that Lieutenant Ouattara would have had grounds to stand on if he was saying, I refused to take this particular order or to give this particular order because I thought it violated the Nuremberg principles, but he can't refuse to deploy because of that.
That's exactly right. There is a defense to violation of orders. Under the Manual for Courts-Martial, it is a defense to any charge that the accused was acting pursuant to orders, unless the accused knew the orders to be unlawful or a person of ordinary sense and understanding would have known the orders to be unlawful. So military law does recognize a defense of obedience to orders, but the defense doesn't apply if the order is unlawful. That's the long and short of it. Now, that is applied to specific kinds of conduct. So, for example, an order to execute a prisoner, for example, would be a plainly illegal order. You have a duty to disregard such an order, to resist such an order. That's different from an order simply to deploy. That's the line that is involved in this case, and Lieutenant Watata falls on the wrong side of that line, it seems to me.
I bet there's absolutely nothing written about what the guidelines are if you think a war is illegal.
That's correct. Now, it does happen that there was a case in Germany, in the German armed forces, of an officer who objected to some kind of participation. He had an office job, and he was called upon to perform some duties in support of operations, I believe, in Iraq. And he objected because he felt the war in Iraq was illegal. That case went up through the court system in Germany, and the German court held that his preference to perform some other duty should have been honored. The long and short of it is, that's not the law in the United States.
Now, Lieutenant Watata is also being charged with conduct unbecoming because of the anti-war statements that he made to journalists and at a press conference. His lawyer says that conduct unbecoming is a charge usually applied to things like adultery or writing bad checks, not to anti-war statements. And his lawyer argues that this is really a First Amendment issue and that the lieutenant's conduct has not violated his oath as an officer. What's your understanding of how the charge of conduct unbecoming is being applied to Lieutenant Watata?
There are two provisions in the Uniform Code of Military Justice that are very flexible. One is the prohibition on conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. By the way, it also applies to women. And the other is conduct to the prejudice of good order and discipline, or conduct that is service discrediting. Those two provisions, which are Articles 133 and 134 of the UCMJ, are extremely flexible. They cover a multitude of sins. For many years, there has been concern that they're too flexible and that they don't afford sufficient prior notice of what is criminal conduct and what isn't. In this particular case, I will say that my own view is the prosecution should not have cluttered the case up with issues relating to free speech. I'm not saying that the government will win or lose that. I think the government, they may have some problems with those charges. Had I been the prosecutor, I simply would have relied on the fact that Lieutenant Watata had failed to move with his unit, and that's quite an easy offense to prosecute, and it would have presented a much clearer case, a much simpler case, and would have avoided, at least possibly avoided, a number of the issues Lieutenant Watata is raising.
What's your understanding of the rights of an officer to free political speech, and what are the limitations on free speech when you serve as an officer on active duty in the military?
There's no question that military personnel, including officers, enjoy rights under the Bill of Rights, including the right to free speech. On the other hand, there's also no question that there are certain constraints that apply to military personnel. For example, Congress has said that military officers cannot speak contemptuously of the President of the United States or various other officials. You and I could speak however we want about the highest officials in the country without worrying about being thrown into jail. But a military officer cannot speak contemptuously without running the risk of being sent to jail. A famous case about this happened during the Vietnam War. There was an officer named Howe who was engaged in an anti-war protest, and he was carrying a picket sign that accused President Lyndon Johnson of being a fascist. Incidentally, he misspelled the word fascist, and I've always wondered whether that counted against him in the prosecution. So there are cases where military officers and military personnel generally have certain constraints on what they can say. Where that line is uncharted, and it's probably not chartable. These cases are notoriously fact-specific. We tend not to prosecute them because we don't have all that much vocal dissent within the armed services. People in the armed services today are not conscripts. They're all volunteers. They tend to be supporters of the program, and they tend to keep their views to themselves.
Now, the charges against him are seen by some as an attempt to silence opposition to the war that's coming from within the military. What would your response to that be?
I don't agree with that. I think there's a danger that prosecution can have a chilling effect. On the other hand, we really don't expect the military to play all that great a role in the political life of the country. There's great controversy, for example, when retired officers who are no longer wearing the uniform express their political views. For people who are still on active duty, it's much more sensitive. In our society, the culture is that we have civilian control of the military rather than the other way around. It's one of the strengths of our democracy. It calls for some self-restraint by military personnel. And happily, we very, very rarely get cases where we're forced to decide precisely where the boundary lies. That's a good thing, in my opinion.
My guest is Eugene Fidel, the president of the National Institute of Military Justice. We'll talk more about the upcoming court-martial of the first commissioned officer to refuse to deploy to Iraq after a break. This is Fresh Air. We've been talking about the upcoming court-martial of Lieutenant Aaron Watata. He refused to deploy to Iraq. He says the war is illegal. He faces up to 2 years for refusing to deploy and up to 4 years on charges related to public comments he made opposing the war and criticizing the Bush administration. We spoke to Watata earlier in the show. Let's get back to our conversation with Eugene Fidel, the president of the National Institute of Military Justice. Lieutenant Watata's lawyer expressed the concern that since Lieutenant Watata is facing a military jury, that the military jury may be biased against any kind of speech that opposes the military or the government that got us into the war. So is there that built-in bias in the system?
It's a fair concern, but the system also has some protections to prevent bias on the part of the jury. Specifically, there's an opportunity that the defense has to make sure that people aren't biased by asking them questions before the jury is seated. This is called voir dire examination. It can be fairly open-ended. The military judge will be presiding over that process, and the government also, by the way, will be able to ask some questions to make sure the jury is able to do its duty impartially and follow the judge's instructions. So the system has some protections against the danger of bias.
The lieutenant's lawyer says that they have been denied all of their witnesses that they wanted to call.
I believe the point they're making is that their Nuremberg defense has been thrown out by the judge as a matter of law. If you are seeking to call witnesses for the purpose of advancing a defense that has been decided by the judge not to have any merit as a legal matter, it's a waste of time to call witnesses.
So your understanding is that the reason why Lieutenant Watata can't use the Nuremberg defense to justify his refusal to go to Iraq is that you can't try in a military court whether a war is legal or not.
It's a political question. That's what the judge held, and the judge cited an earlier ruling of the United States Court of Appeals for that proposition. I think that ruling would probably be sustained, and given that ruling, no purpose is served by taking evidence, because if there's nothing there as a matter of law, why burden the court and the record with testimony that's irrelevant?
In what court would you decide whether a war was legal or not?
In no court at all. You'd decide it in Congress. The remedy for an illegal war is for Congress to either defund it, or if the initiation of the war is viewed as a high crime and misdemeanor, then there's a process in the Constitution.
For the charge of refusing to deploy to Iraq, Lieutenant Watata faces a possible 2-year sentence. But for the charges of conduct unbecoming, for public statements that he made in opposition to the war and how he got into the war, he faces 4 years, so a total of 6. Does that seem, in terms of military justice, like a lot of years for speech?
I could imagine speech that was so subversive of the national interest that it could conceivably be punished very severely. Whether this is too severe or not severe enough, I don't think we're in a position to say at the moment. Frankly, I don't think he's going to spend a lot of time in the stockade. I think he's going to be out fairly soon. No purpose is really served by keeping him for a prolonged period. But I do think that if he is convicted, he may well face some time in prison.
Well, the purpose would be in part maybe to set an example?
Yes, and that is a proper purpose of the military justice system. It's to punish, to deter, and to send a message.
What precedents might this court-martial set?
I think it's a case that if it's pursued straight through the process may lead to an interesting appellate decision, but I don't know that it's really plowing new ground. I think it's an interesting example of the limits of free speech in the military, and in a way, a useful reminder. So I think Lieutenant Ouattara has done the country a favor, but it may not be the favor that he intended. The favor that I think he's conferring is a reminder of the importance of civilian control of the military and of the, I think in many senses, salutary restraint that military personnel have shown over the years in terms of the public issues facing the country.
Eugene Fidel, thank you so much.
My privilege.
Eugene Fidel is the president of the National Institute of Military Justice. Earlier we heard from Lieutenant Aaron Ouattara and his lawyer. Ouattara's court-martial is scheduled for February 5th.